You are now listening to the Black Girl Nerds podcast.
Five, six, seven, eight. Holla, boys and girls, it's the BGN. Coming from the Marvel world to the DC friends. All the way from Hollywood to the PCN. She defends everyone from sleazy men. Won't apologize for spitting Shonda rhymes. The space that we make is never colonized. Talking games and movies and actors. Words? Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Yeah. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Black Girl Nerds podcast. My name is Jamie and I am your host. We are so pleased to bring to you actor, multi-hyphenate really, because he's more than just an actor, Orlando Jones, who is no stranger to the Black Girl Nerds podcast. This is probably his third appearance, I think, on our show. I've lost count at this point, but we are so glad to have him back to talk about music. That's right. You know him from movies, TV shows, Sleepy Hollow, American Gods, Drumline. You know his resume, right? Well, we are so excited to talk about his musical venture. Orlando Jones has a project called Tainted Love. It's already been released. It came out on December 19th, and it's an honest, soul-driven project that explores the duality of fame, relationships, and redemption. The album blends raw emotion with Orlando's signature storytelling and marks a major milestone in his career as both an artist and executive producer under the GSR imprint. Now, if you remember, which way, way back in the archives of Black Girl Nerds, we talked about Tainted Love, which is based on a graphic novel that he was involved in and a part of. So that is the inspiration as well behind this musical project and production process of Tainted Love. And he talks to us about that and so much more in this episode of the Black Girl Nerds podcast. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode with the great Orlando Jones. Mr. Orlando Jones, thank you again for coming on the Black Girl Nerds podcast. You are no stranger to our platform. You have always been a supporter throughout the years, and we always enjoy speaking with you and promoting your work and supporting what you do. And I'm really excited about this project that you are doing, because this is a little different. You know, you actor, you've worked in the graphic novel space, but now music. So talk to us about this. Tainted Love, it's described as an honest, soul-driven project. What was the emotional truth that most determined you to protect while doing this album?
Oh, please, listen. Love is a hot mess. Otherwise, R&B wouldn't exist. the blues part in particular. I've been a musician for so long. But in the space in which I guess I came into Hollywood, there's a real interest in trying to make you be this thing like this, all right? And they're like, 30 Seconds to Mars, that's different. You can't do that. That's what's wrong with you. And I think that's probably why I did Drumline, to be honest with you. I mean, Dallas Austin is, aside from that project being based on his life, he's one of my best friends, and it requires musical chops in order to jump into that sort of realm. But I think it's probably been a part of my life since I was in high school, actually probably prior to high school, had a band in high school, had a rap group in high school. We were singing all the classics along with, writing our hellish rhymes at that time. And Tainted was, I really felt like there's this weird thing that happens with certain people in love. So strippers can't be in love. They strippers. so
They can't be in love? Strippers can't
think
love
they
too?
can, but people act like they cannot, right? There's
Okay.
this belief that if you do this job that I think don't have no dignity, then that means you haven't really got no humanity. So there you go. You out there taking your clothes off. You can't find no, nobody like that. Right? That's how old people see it. And I was like, I want to write something about people who other people think are not deserving of love. And that's really where Tainted came from in terms of an idea. And then the other thing I kind of missed, the movies that I loved action comedies. And then they stopped making action comedies. And I've always loved graphic novels and, animation and comic books and what have you. But again, there's just very few of us, it seemed, in that realm. This niche project, but often sort of relegated to sort of, proud family or what have you. And I was like, I kind of want to open this up and use what technology lets us do. So I was like, I want to do live action. I want to do rotoscoping. I want to do graphic novel panels. I want it to feel, I think how Scott Pilgrim felt when that originally came out. So in the process of making this graphic novel and filming it and then doing the animation and all of the parts that went away went with that, I realized I didn't have no money for the soundtrack. And I was like, I'm gonna need to make some music with the soundtrack. And I asked several, musician friends. And they were all busy. They were either touring or writing for other people or whatnot. So I was like, okay, I guess I'm gonna go in the lab and do this. And then I did. And then we released it, and we released it originally on Machinima, which obviously is a gaming site, right? Primarily MCM, right? The multi-channel network. And the response to the music caught me off guard. The artwork was always really dope, so I expected people to respond to that. But and then people, I started getting messages like, "When you gonna release, the music? Stupid! Why would you release this and not give a? What's wrong with you?" Like it was, I was like, "Oh wow, okay." So and I did like a mini release then, and then I just kind of backed up because I got busy with Sleepy Hollow, and then aside from being on this show, my company was, running marketing and branding and stuff with Kurtzman & Norsey at the time. And Kurtzman & Norsey had so much going on. And my partners and I also had Alcon. So we had all of those projects to work on. And I just kind of had, and by the time I got done with my sort of marketing and branding digital work, my acting work, and then I found myself in the midst of American Gods. And I just kind of looked up and time had passed, and I had really just not fully put the album out. And I kind of shelved it and went on and started making other music. And my agent, my former, I should say, my former manager, hit my agent and went like, "We should do something with this." And they sent it over to a record label, and the record label called back. I was like, "Who is this? Let's talk about how we're going to sign this now." And I got on a call with them a couple of weeks later. When I got off the call, they sent me a record label deal. And I was like,
I
I
love it.
thought we was releasing music. And they were like, "You sent us 120 songs." And I was like, and they're like, "They're not all in the same genre. So we think you should have a record label." And so Gangsta Rock Records was born about 90 days ago, and they were like, "And we're releasing this now." I was like, okay. So December 19th, we dropped the first three singles of the eight, and here I am.
That's incredible. That is
It's
amazing.
crazy.
The album, it explores the duality of like fame, relationships, and redemption. Was there a moment in your own life where it became like the emotional anchor of this project?
Oh God, yeah. I got divorced like late 2018 into 2019, and then the pandemic hit, and all that mess. And during that period of time, I just started writing music, right? Because I couldn't go to work because we were in a pandemic. And I think, you know, when the American God stuff happened, I got the impression that people thought, you know, that not being able to play Mr. Nancy was going to be like devastating to me on some level. And it wasn't. It was more like, no, I'll just, you know, I was writing this one. It's not like y'all wrote it for me. You know what I mean? Like, y'all wrote one speech and then left me to my own devices for
Wow.
the rest of it, right? So I felt like, you know what? You know, I want to do something different. I want to go somewhere else. And you know, when you're going through a divorce, I think it's kind of crazy, at least to me, because I could have looked at my ex and gone down that road, but I thought I should look at me and go down that road. You know what I mean? And explore what that road is. And that's kind of tangible, because I think love has a cycle, right? It's tainted. If I was writing the songs, I guess I am, it would be Tainted Love is number one, right? And then it's Damn, because you have that ex, you know, you meet the person and you go to your friends, you're like, damn, okay, yeah, this is different, right? And then I feel like there's a point where stuff goes left, and that's where you at, leave me alone. I'm not, this is not, leave me back away. Who are you? Who exactly are you? I'm just trying to understand. And then you get, I believe what happens is we get into this thing where there's a level of loneliness, and then there's the sex, and you start to miss it, and then you know, the holidays hit, and next thing you know, you have some of that spiked eggnog, and you beep, 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 beep. I just called to say Merry Christmas. I don't want none. And then you driving across the city, and you know, having a effing celebration, as I call it, and those roads often lead back to you, back to the person, and that is really kind of how it came together. Those were really the songs: "Tainted Love," "Damn," "Leave Me Alone," "Who Are You," "Drive Across the City," "Fucking Celebration," "Back to You." That's the though that was the song. So I literally wrote the song titles out, and I was like, yeah, I know what these tracks are. So, and I started writing, and I was like, I don't want this to sound like I'm trying to be any of these people. I want it to sound like, where did this come from? So, and with that, the Tainted Love soundtrack was completed, and I was like, the soundtrack matches what you're watching in the graphic novel, right? You're watching Barry and Jezebel go through this crazy experience. He's coming home from multiple tours, and he, you know, bumps into this girl, and he has no recollection of anything he's been through. It's kind of a Manchurian Candidate type dude. So he doesn't remember his past relationship with his fiance. He's just home from war, meets this girl, and gets caught up in the whirlwind with her. And I was like, okay, so that's one version of Tainted Love in my graphic novel, and this is sort of the musical version. And these two projects kind of are, you know, mother sister or simpatico, you know, one's the B side to the other, and that's how I got here.
You've played these like very unique, idiosyncratic, very distinct characters throughout your career. Have you ever been informed by these roles, these performances that you've played, and used that in your writing of these songs that you've done for Tainted Love?
100.
Like, have you informed the character of Mr. Nancy or even your characters through Sleepy Hollow or Drumline or even Back with Office Space?
All those characters are sort of, when I was doing Mad TV, characters got really personal to me. So like the character from Office Space is my cousin, that's my little cousin, right? Because she sold Girl Scout cookies, and she hated selling Girl Scout cookies, so she wouldn't fully commit to it. She would like, do you want some Girl Scout cookies from Girl Scout cookies from Michael's? If you do, I could get a better life for myself and get a better job, and then maybe you want a cookie. And I was like, she is so not committed to this. And that's where Steve from Office Space could give me some. My name is Steve. I come from a real area. I used to be the crack, and now I'm off and trying to stay clean. I believe hard work has stay clean, make a better life for myself. That's why I'm setting my magazine subscription. But that's my little cousin, right? And Dr. Lee is Miles Davis. I always loved Miles. Miles has always been a North Star for me, because I always felt there's such a power for an artist to be so rooted in their own artistry that they just, Miles turned his back on his audience. Miles mostly played with his back to the audience because he's like, y'all don't get it. Like, you're not in this with me. You just, out there doing your thing. So he turned his back and played with the other musicians who understood what he was doing, right? And I that always spoke to me on such a level, right? That he was so comfortable. He didn't care what you thought, he didn't care what your feelings were. It's like I'm doing my thing and you came to see my thing. So what does it matter if I'm facing you or not? And that's really Dr. Lee, for me. Dr. Lee is rooted in that tradition. Because I feel like historical black colleges, those band directors have been the producers of the music that is the soundtrack to all of our lives. A lot of, Commodores, all those folks came out of historically black colleges. Isley Brothers and what have you. Schools weren't even integrated at that particular time. When you look back in the 60s and 70s, and those band directors taught and brought us, the music that ultimately was, everybody else made money on, but it was those individuals were nurtured by those band directors. And so Drumline's always held a special place because of that. And then I was like, I want him to be a purist like those band directors are, and that you're gonna learn this. And I don't care that you can't write music. You're gonna learn what you're supposed to learn, right? And to push you out of your comfort zone, which I feel like, Dr. White and so many others did. And for me, musically, I got taught by those guys because my father coached at Florida State. I spent a lot of time growing up on the Florida A&M campus. My dad coached at South Carolina State. I grew up in the historically black college tradition. I'm from the Deep South. My dad went to Alabama State. So I grew up in that whole Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference, right? I grew up in, in the Four Corners with, Clark Bethune and, Morehouse and Spelman, right? That the historically black college thing is my life. Primarily because my parents went and because that's how I grew up. And when I got to Cali, I felt a real separation from it, to be honest with you, because I was meeting many people who looked like me and who were in the business, as I like to say, of being black, but they didn't go to historically black colleges and really weren't steeped in that Southern historically black college thing, right? So they had on kufis and the t-shirts, right? I didn't have the t-shirts on, but it was my lived experience, right? So I was like, so for me, it was like, who are y'all? Y'all went to, you went to USC, you went to Berkeley, you went here. Like, I grew up there, right? So I just have always gone back to it because I feel like it was such a huge part of my life. And I learned so much from those folks. And in the music, I feel like it's there, right? Why are you copying that dude? Like, what's your sound? What do you think? Well, how do you want people? How do you want people to feel after they hear it, right? That for me, that was every band director I ever heard on the field. Like, I don't feel it. Horns, I don't feel it. Right?
I love that.
Yeah, and I really kind of was like, man, I want people to feel it. I want people to feel all of that, and I wanted the orchestration and the music to really make you be like, oh, okay, this is going down. But for it to be complex and interesting, and I don't know, just trying not to copy what all the other folks is doing.
Well, going back to, wanting to feel and what this album represents, Tainted Love, it exists not only as an album, but you also have it as a graphic novel experience, blending live action with the motion comic. Why was that important for this story to live beyond the music?
Well, a couple of things. I think, first of all, when you release on YouTube, there's a lot of standards and practices components. So when you get into the sex and you get into certain things and the violence and whatnot, you can't do it, right? So it was a way to utilize animation and the graphic novel panels to display that, right? So that it didn't make people be like, oh, it's too raunchy, right? I wanted to use that tech to be able to get around the censors, and I did. So you get to see all of those components, but you experience a lot of it in graphic novel or in animation. Even the big fight between Barry and Tiny, who is anything but Tiny, it's not, it's animated. That's, it's a 3-minute animated fight between the two of them, right? It's not, you know, and yes, there is a live action fight, right, that I have with Detective Jamshid too, but it was like, I want to render this one an animation because it opened up the doors for me to really, you know, make Tiny like the Black Hulk, to toss it my black ass
I love
around.
that.
You know, and so that was part of it, just in terms of thinking about that. And then I think other things is I love animation. I love graphic novels. I love those stories. I love the places that they take us. And I wanted to try and make something that was that matched the music and its visual complexity, right? That had a visual complexity to it. I mean, I'll give you, I think, a musical example. So I did a song called "Leave Me Alone," right? Leave Me Alone has 18 guitars. 18. Now, I wasn't adding guitar riffs for guitar riffs' sake. I wanted the guitarist to feel like what it feels like when you tell somebody, "Leave me alone. I need your number, please. Leave me alone." I wanted that, you know, and so I wanted the guitars to take on that angst, right? And so that means that the sound of each guitar is a little different. So when you're hearing it, you're like, okay, you know, because the drums are popping, you know, and that energy, once you put it visually, like it can't just be like static anymore. It's got to, you know, have an energy to it with regard to what you're viewing, right? And I don't particularly like violence for violence sake. So I was like, how can I use all of these things to have the music communicate what's going on in terms of the violence or what have you, or the sexual energy or whatnot, have the live action, the performance do that, and then have the graphic novels transition to you into places where you can really, you know, vibe with it. And trying to put it all together so that it felt original was kind of a thing. So it's a 28-minute, a little over 28-minute graphic novel. And it's a little over 28 minutes of music, so they're literally matched to one another.
When you're using 18 guitars, how do you comprise the sound so that each sound is different and not like they don't cascade over each other?
So I worked with a number of really incredible artists. One is a incredible musician. His name is Tony Reyes. Tony's out of Philly, and I met Tony through Dallas Austin because he worked on, you know, TLC and this, that. And I can't even, I don't have time to lay out Tony's resume. And we would just sit and click through guitar sounds. You know, you click through one and yeah, okay, that could work, right? But then the next one, like, it can't have that sort of low resonance to it, right? The frequency, you need a different frequency. So, you know, we were just looking for, so we would just go through, listen, play the track, listen, guitar, that ain't it. Play the track, oh, okay, oh, that could be it, right? Play the track, okay, that one, let's lay that one, right? Now that's there. All right, cool. We're in this section. That guitar is awesome. I like it. I'm looking for another one to call and response that one. So that one's going, you know, I want this one going just underneath that going on, right? So what's that sound look like? All right, let's go through the pod. That ain't it. That could be it. Let's try that. No, that ain't it. Oh, that's it. And that's kind of how we went through. And I worked with a really gifted musician. His name is Marco Vitale. And I'd worked with him over at the Sound Guild when we originally laid this down. And Marco was a prodigy musician from the age of 5. Anything with strings, he could play. And we just got kind of lost in it because Marco was a virtuoso. And I could literally be like, "Can you play this?" And he would play it. And then, "Can you play that?" And he was like, "I can play anything as long as it's got strings." And that became how the guitars got put together, mostly, frankly, with Marco Vitale. And then I had the drummer from Blood, Sweat, the bass player from Blood, Sweat, and Tears. I had Brian Delaney from the New York Dolls on my drums. So, you know, I just, you know, I had really dope people, and I, you know, and I could talk to them and be like, I'm looking for Not the Nirvana sound, but the Gap Band sound, because that's where Nirvana got it from. I'm looking for those drums, right? I'm
The
looking for that one, right?
OGs,
And,
that's what's
you know, talking to Brian Delaney from the New York Dolls, he's like, oh, yeah,
Right.
you're looking for that. Yes, right?
Yes.
So I'm like, let's do that, right? I'm looking for what I would call like a Fugle guitar, something Mark Ronson might use in an Amy Winehouse track, where it's got that wah wah, wah 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 wah, and you can kind of feel that. You're like, it's talking to you, wah wah wah, like that. I'm 8 years old. I'm a kid in a studio, so I'm like, he's like, I know what you're talking about. So, and we found this sound, and you know, you hear it, you know, very, you know, you hear it when you hear "Leave Me Alone." You can't miss it. You're like, oh yeah, that's that sound. So, that's how we got to 18 guitars and trying to make the frustration of a breakup come out through the sonic nature of the way we use the guitars on the track.
The sonic nature of 18 guitars. I love it. I love
It's
it.
just a wall at a certain point towards the end. You know what I mean? It's like a wall of guitars, right? I had a DJ Miss was scratching underneath it. You know what I mean? And you know, I sang like a little opera bit, and then we scratched that in. You hear whoa, it's in the middle of the guitars, but it sounds dope as hell. I mean, it just felt like something NRD or Pharrell might have done back in the day. You know what I mean? Where they were, you know, it just. That was kind of the vibe I was going for.
You've always had an outspoken truth and ownership and entertainment. How do you define authenticity in an era where algorithms, are driven by branding?
You know, I backed up from social media right around 2019 because the algorithm kept changing so dramatically that I felt like I wasn't being creative. I was just chasing the algorithm for, you know, for views or likes or whatever. I think that drive, I like the idea of social media driving offline connections. I like the idea of that. And that's how I met you. And how I became a fan of Black Girl Nerds, because I was like, I'm a fan of them online, but how can I meet them face to face and support offline, right? So I was like, we at the con, I'm showing up to the Black Girl Nerds party. I'm a crash because I want to have an offline experience. And frankly, you guys were kind of a big part of that, of me saying I want to reach out to those people who feel like, you know, we're loving the same things, we're talking about the same things, but we never have a face-to-face interaction with the other. We never call somebody to see how we can support them. That just happened to me with my brother David Banner. We worked all season on Family Business New Orleans. We never had any scenes together. And then, you know, about 3 weeks ago, he hit me up and he's like, brother, oh, I'm just calling to check in and say hello and, you know, give you some love and, you know, how can I help? I don't need nothing. And I was like, wow, that's, you know, first of all, David Banner is a beautiful person. He's definitely gone through a lot. And I look at online in that way. If I vibe somebody online, I shoot them a message on their DM and I'm like, yo, let's connect. Like, here's my phone number, here's my email. I feel like that's really more important. And then in terms of the online of it all, it's just less interesting to me overall than it was several years ago. But I believe that, I think I've always said YouTube is likely going to win the war.
How so?
Well, let's just for a moment take a step back and look at platforms, right? For most people, the number one platform is their phone because that's the thing they got with them, right? But that's an interactive thing. You touch that screen, right? Then, depending on who you are, it's either the pad, the slate, the computer, or the gaming device. So that means your first four platforms for certain are generally mobile, and the fifth platform, being the TV screen, is hanging on your wall or in your house. But the number one place to view content on all of those platforms, the first five, is YouTube. YouTube's number one on your phone, number one on your gaming device, number one on your computer, and number one on your pad. That's the number one platform for viewing content. They have a server. It doesn't cost anything. It's not one type of content. Sure, it's everything. It's movies, it's television shows, it's instructional videos, it's, you know what I mean? It's how to, right? It's user-generated content all sitting in one particular place. They're going to win the war. Nobody else can give me that level of content, frankly, and no one else has a server. I point this out to people all the time. There are only three people with servers. Amazon has one, Apple has one, and Google has one. Everyone else is utilizing someone else's server.
Someone else's server, you're
What
right.
happens when you get hacked and they cut you off from your audience and the finances that come with that audience? What happened? What happened then if you Netflix? How'd that work? Y'all ain't got no server. I mean, just
Right.
practically, I think that's an issue.
Yeah,
Right?
you're right.
So when I think of online and I think how, you know, even if you're HBO, right? HBO can advertise on HBO, but they can't advertise on Showtime. They can't advertise on Stars. They can't advertise on NBC,
Right.
right? They
Yeah.
have to advertise on digital or with, you know, outdoor. So again, we're in such a particular place. And what I'm describing is not new. It's been true for a minute, right? You have your followers. I got my followers. Justin Timberlake got his followers. None of us reach more than 3% of our followers when we post. If he want to reach them 40 million people, he got to pay them for that.
Yes, that's true.
Right? Okay. So there, you don't go viral. There's no such thing as going viral. That hasn't been true for a decade. What you did, I mean, real viral, right? Now you're paying for it. You're paying for it to get it out. So paid media's paid media. That's where we are. So when I
That's where
look
we
at it, I
are.
think people look at it through this nostalgic lens of what viral used to be 15, 20 years ago, or, you know, even in 2008, 2009. We're not even there anymore. We're in a whole nother game. So I look
Yeah,
at digital
so
through that
different.
particular lens. It's a different thing altogether. And
For sure.
even for you guys, you've been around for a decade now, and I see you popping up in places, I rejoice because I know you have this one-to-one experience with that, you know, actor, artist, what have you, that now is being pushed out from a perspective that previously didn't exist. I didn't hear nothing that was black female focused prior to 2017, 18. And often my first thought is that, right? I was raised by a collection of black ladies. So, you know, during a time when men didn't feel the need necessarily to be as engaged as fathers as I am, right? I'm all in. But, you know, men, you know, during that era, men were like, let the woman handle that, right? They thought differently. And so I'm like, my first thought is often my mom or my aunties or my grandmom. I can't help it. I hear their voice in my head. So you guys are like, oh, a breath of fresh air. Because I felt like I understood the voice and the voice felt familiar to me in a way that other voices, which we might be talking about the same thing, but they're not as familiar to me. They don't feel like home in the same way, to me, right? The accent, the choice of words used to describe this feels like something one of my aunties would have said. So I feel like online is a beautiful place if you can create what we created. I think right around that era where we had, you know, Black's Geek Soul Brother,
Yes,
you
one
know,
of the OGs of the blurred community.
right? But if you look at the blurred community, you know, y'all were making God's Y'all trend every week.
Yes,
Nobody
we did
spent a
on
half a million
Twitter. We
dollars,
sure did.
right? So that grouping of folks on the East Coast did what cost us on the marketing side a half a million dollars. And I feel like that's the group I want to put back together because that group to me was the thing. That was the probably the greatest time I've ever had online. And I miss it. I miss what we did.
Same.
I missed how other we were making stuff trend that was not paid for. And we did it
Right.
every week.
Every week.
Every week. All by us just choosing a time to get together and push. So for me, I want that back again. I want to put that, even if we just get on and decide we're going to randomly push this every week. Tony got a new book coming out, Children of Blood and Bone, the movie's coming out. Gina's
I'm
been making.
trying. I've done some watch parties on Threads, so I'm trying to do something with Threads. So
Well, hit
hopefully.
me. I will come for sure. I just think what we were doing at that time, I don't think we realized the importance and the power of it.
Yeah,
Right.
I
And
agree. I agree.
together we can do that again, which is, why I always tweet dumb stuff like, stronger together. Like people but I've seen it. I've seen it, and I just think it was special. It was a special time.
It was a special time. Looking back at your career across film, TV, music, now graphic novels, where do you feel the most creatively right now?
They're all kind of the same thing to me, sis. I feel like,
Really? Okay.
I approach everything kind of like it's either one of two worlds, right? Either here's the blank slate and I'm trying to create myself, but you still collaborate with others to do that, or somebody is handing me what they want me to do as a writer, at which point I really do not put my acting, producing, writing hat on. When you hire me as an actor, I am focused on what you want this character to be. And I try and dive into it purely from that vantage point, depending on what you ask me to do. And so because of that, I enjoy collaborating with other people. So if you say to me, hey, I want you to write this, then I'm trying to write it as best I possibly can, but I'm not trying to direct it. And I'm not trying to produce it. If you want me to produce it, then okay, then I'm trying to produce it, right? But I really try and focus on what I was asked to do. And I see them all as the same thing because everything gets made by force of will and nature, right? Not because everybody's trying to help you. It doesn't matter where you come from, doesn't matter what you look like, all that, right? It's just as hard to get the content made for everybody, right? It's not a cakewalk for anybody, right? So because of that, I see the creative as either I decided to lock arms with you and we go into war to try and get this made together, or I didn't. I don't care if we have money or we don't have money. I don't care if we have studio backing or we don't have studio backing. I just know I joined you and your creative vision. Let's get it in, right? And I see it as the same because it's a slog and it's a battle every time. But if we can get anything close to what your vision was, and if you can stay humble and open enough to let other people bring their creative into the vision, I believe it can come to life in a beautiful way. That's certainly, I believe, what happened with Sleepy. Sleepy was, that wasn't the creator's vision per se, but it was the vision of all individuals. And suddenly we had the most multicultural show in network television history. Since then, other shows have come behind it that leaned into some of the same things that we leaned into. But at the time, it was just a battle to try and get it done. So for me, always the same slate, always the same battle. Here are my creative brothers and sisters that I'm working with. However they identify, I don't care. Let's get it in, right? That was God's. Mr. Nancy is as much mine as he is Brian Fuller and Michael Green's because I created that character originally with them based on what they were thinking, right? Yes, I have my own thoughts, but their thoughts guided the way to the first speech. So it was a collaboration, right? With two white guys, right? Who are completely different guys, right? You know what I mean?
How
One
much of it
binary,
was
one.
your character and how much of it was theirs, like percentage wise?
I don't even know. What I will say is this, and I point this out to people all the time when people, I think start thinking in very myopic ways. That speech on the slave ship was not written by me. That speech was written by Brian Fuller and Michael Green. Brian Fuller is a member of the LGBTQ plus community, but he didn't write that speech in a vacuum. He went and reached out to everybody who looked like us to say, hey, let's talk about this, right? Because I'm writing this thing and I want to talk about it in this particular way. Brian is the type of creative that opens his soul, opens his heart out to other creatives. Michael Green is the same. So for me, they weren't there when I shot it. It's only four takes. That's
Wow.
literally all it is, right?
Wow.
They weren't there. They were in LA. I was in Vancouver. I'm sorry, in Toronto. I was in Toronto.
Toronto.
And the director is actually Guillermo Navarro. The director is Mexican. He didn't get credit for it because they took it from the episode it was supposed to be in and moved it to a different episode. But that was the collaboration of a Mexican-born director, a black actor, I would say an Irish LGBTQ man, and a Jewish man, right? Those individuals, along with the costumes, Sudarat, who made that insane suit, and the purple and the royalty and all those things we talked about, right? That was the collaboration of all of those artists coming together, by which for us to create what Nancy was. And then after that, I took what we created and moved it forward with other artists, except now I had to be the writer and I had different directors and we had different costume designers. But that original group, I can't, I believe it was all of us. Because all of it's what you're looking at, right? Including the young man. Oh, I just blanked on his name. Who's the slave who's praying to me? I actually don't even think the scene works without him. His prayer is so beautiful that
Yes, it was.
I stepped into it, right? He created that performance of his is top notch. So I look at that. I look at the greased up 50 black dudes that sit there playing the slaves, and we were all in that together. And that's what creation is. It's a collaborative thing. So I share equal credit with all of them because it was my face and my voice. And yes, I chose how he talked. Yes, I chose how he moved. Yes, I chose to follow the slave trade of voices, because we all got dropped off on different little islands on our way here, right? And because I wanted people who lived on those islands and whose ancestors, I wanted them to hear it. I wanted them to hear themselves. I wanted Haiti and Barbados and Jamaica. I wanted everybody to hear themselves. And so, my choice was to give him those accents, and have it shift, because he is a god to all of those, right? But that's kind of, for me, how it came from. I just Same process with Ethan Hawke and Good Lord Bird and creating the Rail Man. Same process. Talk to Ethan, talk to the writer, sat down with the director on set, really, because we didn't talk prior to. We roll and let's go, right? It's the Wild West. I love every part of it, but to me, that's kind of what it is. It's a collaboration, and we all share in the success of it or in the failure of it.
Well, speaking of collaboration, going back to Tainted Love, December 19th, as you mentioned, it marks a major release date for the album. What do you hope listeners sit with after hearing the album from front to back?
I hope that I hope they dance. I hope you
Like that.
dance. I want you to dance. I want you to smile. I want you to kind of be surprised. I think it's a tricky needle to thread. Because on one level, I haven't given them the graphic novel yet. I'm just giving them the music, and I haven't given them all of the music, just two, three songs right now. So I kind of just hope people dive into the experience and vibe with it, right? I feel like I feel like the hook for Tainted Love, which my boy Novel is on with me. Like, I ain't the type to be balling and things, but there's so many ladies and they're calling my name. So just tell me what you want, girl. So what you want, girl? Tell me what you want, girl. Tell me what you want now. I wanted to kind of bend that away from what the braggadocio that you normally hear in hip hop, which is all about all the bitches and the hoes you got. And how they all go and spread eagle because you gave them money. That's
Oh
usually the
no,
narrative.
stop.
So I was like, I am not the type to be balling and things. But yes, there's a bunch of ladies in there calling my name. So tell me what you want. I was like, I want that. I'm inviting that conversation, right? Right. And I that is kind of it, right? The same way I feel like all of the song is sort of an invitation for somebody to jump into this musical journey with me, and then hopefully rock with the visual journey, and hopefully apply their own feelings towards, love and relationships and whatnot. My hope though is that you dance and laugh with it, and vibe with it, I guess.
Finally, my last question to you is for fans who's followed your work for decades, why is now the right time for Tainted Love?
Man, one of the things I've noticed a lot is that people feel, or there seems to be a lot of discussion about people feeling like the world's in a crazy place. People feel, I hear a lot about these feel, the politics, the this, ISIS running folk down in the street, this was a holiday, now it ain't a holiday, Now feels like a time to talk about things other than politics. It feels like we should talk about the things we can control. And if the love is absent from your life, then all your neurons ain't firing right, pimp.
That
Like
part.
you're missing, there's a lot you're missing. And if you're caught up in all that the external world is throwing at you right now, I understand why you feel lost. I understand, because it's crazy. So to me, music has always been a thing that connected us. It's so visceral, right? It's so primal. I was like, I feel like making something and saying, "Watch this," is one thing. But recording something and making something to hear it, and if I can tickle your ear and get to your heart that way. But I kind of want the discussion to be love and where it is, and if it's tainted in your life, right? If it's broken, then get it right. The crazy part about tainted love is that Barry and Jezebel are, they a hot mess. Because, what is he doing with this woman? You know what I mean? And what is she doing with him? Like, it's a hot mess on so many different levels. Even the race of it all, right? She's white, he's black, right? You know what I mean? I wanted all of those to be a part of the messiness of it all. But I really want people to examine love, because I feel like that's a lot of what happened to me, right? I realized that, and I'm not speaking for all relationships, I'm purely talking about my own relationship. I realized in my previous significant other, I was making a lot of excuses for her. For her, and she wasn't trying to meet me where I was, right? She was trying to stay where she was, right? And so I felt like my blackness, which is such a huge part of, it's not all of who I am, but it's a huge part of who I am. And it's a part of who I am that I am unabashedly not ashamed of. Like, I'm proud of it. I never wanted to be anything but this, right? But I felt like there are lots of people who wanted me to be something else. And she's one of those people that wanted me to be something else than what that was, right? And I was like, my mama told me not to go down that road. And I didn't listen. And I didn't understand what she was trying to tell me, but I do now. And that was a huge part of why now, why the music now, why talking about love now. I'm like, you've gone through it in your own life. Other people certainly have gone through it. Let's try and have a different conversation, a different way. And let's not lead with you being funny, or you being dramatic, or you acting. Let's lead with something else and see if we can open up another door and maybe take my fans down a different rabbit hole together. And hopefully they come out of it feeling like it was worthwhile. And they're like, you know what? I'm glad I took that journey. It was an enjoyable, half hour of my life. So that was really it. Particularly since I'm out touring a lot right now. I'm out in January. I'm performing every month, at least in a couple of places. I haven't done that in a minute. Not around the country. I just mostly been in the East Coast, staying in the same places. But now I'm in Brea January 23rd. I'm in Atlanta on February. I'm in Atlanta on February 3rd. I'm down in Alabama State at President's Day right after that, like February 5th and 6th. You know what I'm saying? With that group, I'm coming back in March. I'm in Arizona. I'm literally everywhere. I'm about to drop a bunch of dates. And you know, the first thing I'm gonna do is play some music and be like, take out your Shazam, or just Shazam this real quick.
Love it. Love to
but
see it.
I want to have that conversation, man. I want to talk it because that's a lot of what I'm talking about in stand-up. I'm talking about love. I'm talking about Trolando because I don't feel like I gave my troll his just due. My supervillain is just due. A lot about that, and I'm also asking. I'm doing an AMA. I'm like, I don't care if you ask me a question. Ask me whatever you want. I don't care. Like, let's talk. Let's get messy.
So where can folks get your music? And is Tainted Love like a companion piece? Can you get the graphic novel with the music, or should we read the book
So
first and listen to the songs? Should we listen to the songs first, then read the book?
it don't matter. They're
Okay.
built to be different experiences. So right now there's only three songs out. So you can hear the three songs. The graphic novel, the visual, I'm gonna release it in the new year. So the way it works is the graphic novel is broken into pieces. So and the music. So for right now, Chained Love, you'll be able to watch that. When I drop the music video, you'll see pieces of the graphic novel and the music video. You'll know what's going on, right? The idea is that you will watch it and you will listen to it, but you don't have to read it yet. You know, TLDR. You know what I'm saying? You can just watch and you can just listen. It's on all platforms. I'm everywhere. I'm probably on 150 different platforms. So if you're Apple, if you're Tidal, if you're Spotify, if you're Deezer, it don't matter. Wherever you are, it is there. And I'll release two more in a couple of months, and then I'll release three more in a couple of months, and that'll be the full album, and then I'll release the full graphic novel. So I'm just slowly building up to it now, where you've got the first three songs and you're about to get a couple of episodes and you're about to get a couple of music videos. So I'm just kind of, rolling it out slow.
And where can we find you online or a website where we can see you on tour? You're touring, so where can we go to check out your
OrlandoJones.com
tickets?
is my site, OrlandoJones.com. You can always hit me. Obviously, I'm the Orlando Jones on Instagram and X and what have you. Yeah, I'm on Snapchat. I'm on, I don't, what am I not on?
You still use Snapchat?
I do. Well, I do be, you know, my, and TikTok, obviously. My daughters are on Snapchat.
Yeah, the younger folks are on there.
Yeah, so you know, I
Amazing.
snaps, right? You know, so that's part of how
The
we communicate.
filters and all of that. Yeah, the kids
Hey,
love
yeah,
that.
and plus, you know, it's crazy, but you know, I've learned that my daughter's friends or fans are, you know, a lot of my fan base is very young,
I can
and
see that. The Sleepy Hollow fandom. Yeah.
Sleepy Hollow fandom is young. That Supernatural fandom is kind of young.
Supernatural, yeah,
Yeah,
Breaking
you know what I
Bad, I
mean?
can see it.
All of my fangirling stuff is usually younger fans, right? The older fans are kind of, they're on Facebook and Instagram and what have you, right?
Drumline
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Replacements and Double Take and you know, all that, right? They're on sort of the older legacy platforms, but young people are really, you know, in other places and they are more active with me. They hit me up a lot more. And young people don't care at all about DMing you something, or they see you in something. They're like, hey, check it out. Huh? You know what I mean? So it's a lot. And then, of course, I signed, you know, maybe 28 artists in the 90 days that my label has existed.
Oh,
So
wow. That's awesome.
I have a bunch of folks there, like Nazi the Mike, Nazi the Mike, who's one of my artists, is super dope. But Nazi's 19, 20.
And what's the name of your label again, just for our
Gangster
listeners?
Rock, GangStirROCK. ROCK. The idea is that we are musically. I'm trying to build a gang for us to stir this shit up and rock it out. That's you know, gangster rock.
And
All
is it
rebels.
gangsterrock.com where people can go check that out?
Honestly, we're probably more on socials right now. I think TikTok and
Social.
YouTube may be more important, but yeah, you can check out Gangster Rock. On Insta. You can obviously check it out on Facebook. You can go X, you can go TikTok. But yeah, GSR, All Rebels
GSR.
Welcome. GSR is the label. GSR is my band. And then you'll see a bunch of, Denim is dropping. I think he just dropped, my boy Cookie Rabinowitz out of Philly. He just dropped. Nazi just dropped. So I think we've had in December, I think we did five drops. Son of
Nice.
Pearl is about to drop. So some interesting, really dope artists, and Nazi's been rocking with me for years now. I would have her open for me at my shows, or I'd have her close at the show, right? A 19-year-old LGBT female rapper. She killing
Look
it.
at
Like,
you
just
out here giving folks opportunities,
100,
feeding these babies.
that's the whole part. I mean, listen,
I love it. I
if you
love
ain't
it.
trying to help nobody else, hopefully, if you can assist someone in making their dream come true, I have so much help. You know what I mean? That I'll, you know, like my boy Gilly King say, you ain't no OG, you just an old flea, because you sucking the life out of other people. So yeah, trying to, push for, there's actually a band out of Atlanta that's really a dope rock band. I'm trying to get with them and sign those cats. And I'm just trying to give people a nod of screwed up. I don't take your masters. I don't want your masters. Keep your masters. You know what I mean? I'm giving you the bulk of the revenue. I tell you where your streams are coming from, because really in music, what you need to know, in my humble opinion right now, is if you know where your stream is coming from, you know where you should go tour.
Right.
You're going to make your money more on tour than you're going to make from streams.
Yeah, that
Right?
part. Yep.
So that's really where it's coming from. That's where your merch is coming from. So for me, it was, let me provide all those infrastructural things around them. And now you know where your stream is coming from, so you know where to go tour. You know who to go sell merchandise to. So that, and I'm not taking the lion's share of your money, and neither is my distributor. You are. That's your money, not my money. So I'm not trying to do the whole crazy thing where I'm signing you to something. If you want to end it, end it. I don't care. The only thing
All
I
right,
tell you
well.
is that it's still going to be there. Give us at least 2.5 years after you end the relationship. And the reason I say that is really important. If you end your relationship with somebody and they're bringing in streaming money and you say it's over and I want you to get away from me, your money is still trickling through their system for years. If you cut it off and walk away, what are they going to do? Keep your money.
Right.
I'm not trying to keep your money. So if you want to
Yeah.
sign here today, great, and we're happy, great. If you tell me in 3 months you don't want to do it no more, you don't walk away, walk away. You're done. But I'm gonna keep sending you your money until it's
Okay.
finished. I'm not going to say you're done, so now you don't get your money that was a part of the deal you signed and I
Right.
signed. So it's just trying to be transparent with it, frankly, because I feel like for so many artists, it isn't transparent. You
Yeah, you
don't
always
know.
hear those horror stories where people
Look, when KMG gave me
are
a label deal,
penniless.
that was
Yeah.
exactly right. That was really the whole point. I was like, here's what I want. They said yes. I said, cool. If I sign artists, this is what I want for my artists. They said yes. I said, then we good money, because that's what it's about for me. Don't go sign some horrible deal that you're stuck into and that you don't have the control to be in or get out of. That I wouldn't do that. So why would you do that? That's why I didn't sign my music originally. I'll tell you two quick stories and let you go. So the first person to try and sign me was Jay-Z.
Okay.
He didn't know it was me. Some friends of friends took
With
him the
Rockefeller
music.
Records.
He didn't even have Rockefeller at the time. He was the head of Universal when he first heard my
Oh,
music.
okay.
And he tried to sign me to Universal.
Okay.
And he wanted a key clause in the contract, meaning when he left Universal, I would go with Jay-Z. And Universal was like, but if he can leave with you, then we're not going to give you the money. Because why would we spend all the money and then let him walk out the door with you? Because he's the head of the label right now. So I was caught. Either I signed directly with Universal, I don't get support from the head of the label, which was Jay, or I signed directly with Jay and I don't get the support from Universal. So Jay was like, you're going to be the first artist on Rockefeller Records. He had no idea it was me. And I was like, all right, let me know when you get there. He left Universal, started Rockefeller, and I was like, yeah, I don't want to do that right now. I can't. I'm over here right now. I'm not even in that space. That was then, this is now. I'm not signing. And then it was like, how about we take this track and we give it to this artist? How about we take this track and give it to this artist? So then they wanted to take a bunch of the tracks and give them out to other artists. And I was like, man, I'm good on that too. Not why I made it. I didn't make it for that reason. So I just said, I'm gonna sit on it. I'll release it another day. And this is that day. But that's kind of how I went through the process. In fact, when we recorded Tainted Love, it's the craziest story ever. I was in the studio and Corrupt came through. And Corrupt was gonna get on the track with a dude named TriStar. TriStar is a dope rapper, West Coast. He's all pen is nasty, written for so many West Coast artists, 2 minute a name. So TriStar and Corrupt came through. And this girl showed up in our session with Corrupt. You know her name is V Stiviano. And she started trying to tell me what to do with my session. And I was like, yo, please tell this lady, put this lady out. Like, who brought her? And she left my session with Corrupt. And then Corrupt went back to her place. And then Corrupt started going to basketball games with her. And then her boyfriend got mad. The boyfriend's name is Donald Sterling. And then she recorded her boyfriend saying some things.
Oh, that situation.
That situation
Okay.
started in the Tainted Love recording session. She
Wow.
showed up at my session, started, I guess, dating Corrupt, came back, got in trouble with her boyfriend, recorded her boyfriend talking about her bringing them ins to the game and to the apartment that he had given her and to the cars that they were driving around in. And she took Donald Sterling down.
Wow, that is a crazy story. I did not know that.
So that was we that started in the Tainted Love
Tainted
session.
Love
And I ended
session.
up putting TriStar on the track and not Corrupt, because Corrupt left with V.
With her.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I wanted her. I was like, who out of my session? What is happening right
Right,
now? So
right.
yeah, he left with her and TriStar stayed, and we watched the graphic novel and we wrote the song. I had the hook on already and all that. And then he laid down the two rap verses. And then I found this super dope flutist who was a rapper from St. Louis. Her name is Mani Strings, Mani Strings. And she came in and dropped the last verse on it. And that's how it got put together. But V Stiviana was in our session, and Donald Sterling went down, I guess, because of our Tainted Love session. And I was like, there it is again, Tainted Love. Because, yeah, dude lost his basketball team behind that madness, man. Yeah.
Oh wow. So that
Listen,
should be
I'm not.
worked into like another song. Like that story should be worked into a song like later on down the road.
It is. I'm remixing Tainted Love right now. I'm finna drop like a kind of like a Afrobeat type version of the track.
Yeah.
But it's about that, right? It's
Yes.
about the session that made the song.
That made the song, which is
The
Tainted
session.
Love in
Yeah.
itself.
So I'm
Yeah.
gonna just drop it as a bonus. We actually was in the studio
A
messing with it
bonus.
last.
The bonus EP. I
Girl,
love it.
I was like, I forgot about it. We were recording the music videos, and TriStar walked in. He goes, "Do you remember who was in the session when we did this song?" I was like, "No." He goes, "It was Corrupt and V." And then he literally turned his phone around. And he was like, "That's what happened 3 days later. Remember the
That's
Clippers and Sterling?"
wild.
I was like, I was so focused on the on what I was doing
Right,
and get.
you didn't know.
He was like, "Dude, that happened." He goes, "It's crazy that that tainted love
That
happened
tainted
in your
love
tainted love
in
session."
your tainted love session.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's gotta be a story on the track. It's
Yeah.
gotta be.
It's crazy.
That is
So
crazy.
that's kind of how we got here. And I'm loving it. I'm enjoying it. And thank you for taking the time.
Well, on that note, Orlando, thank you so much for taking the time again to speak to Black Girl Nerds. It's
Always.
always a pleasure to talk to you. Congratulations on your multi-hyphenate of a career. You always have some incredible work going for you. And yeah, don't be a stranger. Don't
I
wait
will.
several years in between to talk to us when you
I
have projects, because you're always working. So
will. I promise you, we will talk several times this year. I will be back for certain. Without doubt. Yes.
Indeed. Thanks so much for your time. Pleasure
Thank you.
talking to you
Happy
as
holidays,
always.
sir.
You too.
The Black Girl Nerds podcast is produced by Jamie Broadnax. The opening theme song to our show is written and performed by Samus. Various instrumentals are performed by Samus, Sky Blue, and Shubzilla. You can find various episodes of the Black Girl Nerds podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Audioboom, Google Play Music, and Spotify.